Thanks for coming out this morning. Of course, a reminder on these talks, set your cell phone to buzz or turn it off. All questions, if you do have them, if you could, just come up to the microphone when we do the Q&A, so we have that for recording purposes also, so then we don't have to repeat the questions. This is the last of the talks in the industry track. I really appreciate everybody coming out to these. I think there's been a lot of valuable information, and I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of valuable information in this as well. There'll probably be some follow-up after this. These seminars will be available online. And, of course, the AHA is always, you know, willing to answer questions you guys have about the industry. You can submit them to Steve Parr, the assistant director. Also, my email is on the website, and if you want to find me and get my email, you can do that as well. My name is Jake Keeler. I'm the chair of the industry subcommittee and on the AHA governing committee. So this morning's talk is Building Your Homebrew Community with John LaPola. And what we're going to do here is we're going to learn how to bridge the gap between homebrewers and craft breweries. In this seminar, John, the co-owner of Bitter and Esther's Homebrew Shop in Brooklyn, New York, will show you how to foster your homebrew community with events and demonstrations. A strong craft beer community can make the homebrewer experience more exciting and valuable for all and keep your clients shopping local. So please join me in welcoming John.
Thank you very much, Jake.
Hey, thanks, Jake. Before I got up here, they said, make sure you speak loud. And I was like, I'm an Italian from New York City. I think we're not going to have a problem with that. First of all, I'd like to thank the American Homebrewers Association for having me here. It's a real honor to be here, and I'd also like to thank them for this conference that they do every year. I mean, it's pretty amazing. It's a different city every year, and it's always awesome, a lot of information, a lot of great beer pouring. So I know how much work that takes, so I really do want to just say thank you, and I really appreciate everything the American Homebrew Association does. So let's see how this works. It worked. So, who are we? My name is John LaPola. I am co-owner of Bitter and Esther's Homebrew Shop in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn, New York. My business partner, Douglas Amport, was supposed to talk with me today, but he couldn't even come to the conference because he has the flu. So, when Douglas hears this later on, I'll say, hope you get better, Douglas. I'm going to fly solo on this. What we are is a homebrew supply shop, so we are a dedicated homebrew supply shop in New York City. We are the only one in the five boroughs of New York City, the only dedicated homebrew supply shop. What? People ask me a lot of times, like, why are you the only homebrew shop? It's because you'd have to be crazy to open a homebrew shop in New York City, I should know. I don't know, but we love it. We really love what we're doing. We've been open for 5 years, and we've just signed our five-year lease for another 5 years, so they can't get rid of us that quickly. I have notes on paper, so you have to excuse me. I didn't realize I could actually have notes on the side here. We are also a dedicated classroom space. When we first opened, we decided that we really wanted to have homebrew education and beer education in the store. It's a much-needed thing. And it really helps with revenue as well, so we love teaching classes and getting people in that way. And we are also a brew on premises. We are the only brew on premises in New York State. We have a 30-gallon electric Blickman system where the customer makes 15 gallons, either extract or all grain. So that's our three revenue streams. We love what we're doing, which I said before, but we still love it since then. How many people own homebrew shops here? All right. So one thing I'd like to say to you before I start my talk is congratulations. If you have a homebrew shop and you're in business, you're doing something right, and I would love to talk to you about what you're doing because all of our trips are unique, right? Everything that each one of us do is unique according to where we have our shop, who our clientele is, and who we are. So what I'm going to talk about today is unique to my store. And what we do, so it might not translate to your store, I understand that. Like if I say something, you'd be like, "What? That's a New York thing." I get it. But maybe you can glean something off of what I'm going to say today and just learn something. I hope so. That's the whole idea. All right. So why is community important? I'm sure you were all at the talk on Thursday, the State of the Homebrew Address at Steve Parr. gave and the other guys gave. And one of the things they mentioned is that retail every year seems to be sloping down a little bit against online sales. Hopefully you're not noticing that in your store, but it is it is something that we are fighting against. That's our competition personally is the online sales. So we realized early on, before we even opened, that we had to offer something else, a different value beyond being able to compete by price. We can't compete by price, especially in New York City. It's just not something we can do. And some of our customers will still shop online. We understand that, but we want to give them a reason to come to the store. So homebrewing is naturally a community, right? What's happening here these past 4 days shows community. Clubs happen because people like to be together. Bars, pubs, for all of human civilization pretty much, have been places that people get together. So the community is there. What we really need to do is tap into it and strengthen the community. Show people that there is a reason to come into your store besides your awesomeness. So isn't our job to sell stuff? Yes, we are retailers. We have to sell stuff. We do need to stay in business. So that part we should have down. As retailers, there's all that happens as well, and that's a million other talks. So we do need to sell stuff, but what we want to do is get people back in the store and have a reason to come into the store. And that's where we really worked on making sure that we had a communal presence in the store. And that's what I'm going to be talking about a lot. I love this one. Craft beer is the new punk rock. I've been thinking about this lately. Take a band like the Ramones. The reason why the Ramones, in New York, I get it. The reason why the Ramones started playing the music they started playing was because the music on the radio in the 70s was bland, had no flavor, it was tasteless, it was fizzy yellow liquid. They needed something different. So what they do, they started to make their own brand of music. They did something with flavor. They did something that people pretty much didn't understand, but certain people started to catch on to it. So what they did was start their own community, and they took the risk and they did it. This is very much what the craft breweries have done. The craft breweries are like the indie bands back in the day, or even now. You actually see clients and beer drinkers following these craft breweries. They treat them like rock stars. They get to meet their favorite brewers. They wait online for the latest release. The parallels are pretty interesting. So they're the indie bands, the craft brewers. So who are the homebrewers? The homebrewers are the garage bands, the ones that want to emulate these craft brewers and say, you know, I can maybe do this. I can rock out. Either they're picking up the guitar for the first time, they're coming in and they're making their first beer, or they've been brewing for a little while and they want to get signed to an indie label. That's what they want to do. So we look at the craft brewers as the homebrewers as that, as the garage bands. And the craft brewers as the indie bands. And the funny correlation with that, too, is sometimes the craft brewers get signed to major labels. Goose Island, right? Goose Island and Ballast Point. But anyway, I mean, that's the dream, right? All right, so now we have these indie bands. And then where are the record stores? Well, the record stores are the bottle shops. These are part of our community as well, the people that sell craft beer exclusively so that people get a taste for it. So people go to these bottle shops and get the latest releases. So they're the record stores. So what are the homebrew shops? The homebrew shops are the music stores. We sell the guitars, we sell the drums, we have the classes on how to play your instruments. So we are the source of information. We are the hub of the community. We are where all of this can actually satellite around. So I know it's a funny sort of analogy, but it actually works. Some of it doesn't work, but most of it works. This is actually a band of homebrewers that I'm in called the Homebrewsicians. So that's what made me think. I was like, oh my God, the music and the foam just go together. All right. So our brick-and-mortar stores do have a competitive advantage over the online stores. Now, we do have an online presence, but again, we don't compete with the big box online stores. We can't. So we have an online presence more as just convenience for our customers and to have that online site so that people can go to. We do sell stuff through it as well. But the advantage we have is that people can actually come in and have an immediate sale. They can feel comfortable in a friendly environment. They lose that intimidation, and they know that there's somewhere they can go back to. So having a good, friendly environment that is filled with information is imperative, and it just keeps people coming back. It creates that return customer. We offer individual attention and personal contact. People love this. When was the last time? It was probably not that long ago that you got on the phone for customer service and you got the computer. Nobody likes that, right? My first thing when I do that, they say, how can I help you? I'm like, human. I want to talk to a person. I don't want the automated responses. People can get their information online. They can watch YouTube videos. That's all great. There's tons of information out there. But to come in and actually be able to talk to a person, to give your personal story, hear their personal story back, this value should not be undervalued. This is something that we have that we need to use to our advantage. And we have, Bitter & Esters has been doing it since we've opened. And I'm sure you all are doing this. I mean, you are in a retail spot, so you do offer that. But it's something that will keep us going. One of the charts that they showed on Thursday was how craft beer was going this way and homebrew was going this way. We want to go with that. We want to be together and have the community as a whole. So we do offer this personal contact. Let me see if I'm missing anything on this. And they trust us. And we have to respect that trust. They trust their homebrew shop. They trust their retail shop. Our retail shops are unique in the fact that we do have to have information. We're not just selling shoes or something where people can just try it on and leave. We sell things and information, and the information is the real important part. Obviously, we need to also have good things, fresh items, and be well stocked. But again, that's the retail end, and I'm sure you're on top of that already. So our customers are our community, and our focus is on lasting relationships. I love this picture. Future homebrewer right there. We try not to go for the quick sale, especially in our store. If somebody doesn't want to buy something, we're fine with it. If they want to come in and talk, we're fine with it. What we're trying to do is have a relationship with our customer that will continue, and that they, again, will have brand loyalty. They will love our store. They know that they have a place that they can go to where they feel comfortable and friendly and knowledgeable. I'm repeating myself a lot, but this is what we do. And we want to create a return customer as opposed to just doing an upsell. We don't want the customer to go home with something that they're not going to use or that they'll use once and never do again. We are trying to get people into this whole hobby, into this community. We want them to be part of what we do. So we are never upselling anybody. I'll sell somebody 1 gallon. My profit margin's terrible. I'm not going to make a lot of money, but I got them. I got them in the community, and then they can slowly build up through that. And what we do as homebrewers, as a homebrew shop, is we help to simplify the process because it is intimidating. A lot of people don't even know that you can make your own beer. And when they hear that you can, they figure it must be really difficult and, I'll just go buy beer. But we want to make this simple and be able to have the information for them so that they know that the beer that they can make beer and also make good beer. If it's possible in your store to have samples, it's always a good idea to brew and have 2-ounce samples for people to try, especially new people, so that they can see that the beer is good. There's still, even though homebrew is getting better and better, there's still a stigma that it's some sort of moonshine or hooch. I had a guy ask me one time if I also made meth. And I said, of course, homebrew, meth, yeah, I'm going to do both. Yeah. So that information, that knowledge is really important. This one we found, my business partner Douglas and I are just naturally friendly people, but we found that learning the customer's name actually brought people back. We've had more than one customer say, you asked me my name, And I never forgot that. And that's one of the reasons why I come here. You care about me. This stuff has to be sincere. You have to really care about this. I mean, why did we open homebrew shops here? I know we did it to be millionaires in 5 years. It didn't work out. I'm sure we all opened our homebrew shops for the same reason, and that was because we loved to homebrew and we wanted to help the community of homebrewers by providing equipment and ingredients to them and information. So by learning your customer's name, you bring them into your world. The hardest part about this is remembering your customer's names. All right, I get that. They don't mind if you ask again. If you ask 15 times, then they might be like, come on, I'm your brother. I'm like, oh, right. But this, we really found that this one thing of people coming in, even people who aren't buying anything, as soon as they come in, hi, welcome to Bitter and Esther's, what's your name? They love it. They absolutely love it. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about the different ways that you can foster your community. Now, this is what we do. Everything I'm going to talk about, we actually do. It's exhausting. It is extra work that doesn't bring in immediate revenue. It's fun, certainly. I'm getting a little long in the tooth to do it for much longer. I'm going to have to pass the torch to somebody else because I go to every homebrew event. Luckily, I like beer. but I had to watch myself last night at club night. I was like, my God, I'm like a kid in the candy store who can't touch any of the candy because I got to talk today. But that's okay. After this, I'm having a beer. So these are certain things that we've done to help foster the community, to give that value to our customers. When they see that our two-row is 25 cents more than they're going to get online, this is what that 25 cents goes to. This is why, if they want to have a homebrew shop in their community, they have to support it. And just, again, we can't compete on price, so we have to give them something else. And these are some of the things that we do. Education in the store we found was really important. As a matter of fact, Douglas and I started teaching classes before we even opened. There's a place called Resistor, which is a hackerspace in Borough Hill, Brooklyn, that allowed us to teach homebrew classes before we opened the store. And it gave us an idea of who might be interested, and it got us used to teaching the classes. So as soon as we opened the doors in 2011, as soon as we opened the doors in 2011, we were teaching classes right away. It's a revenue stream, certainly, and it creates your own customers, and it brings them into the community. So that it's something that really works. If you're not teaching regular beginning classes, this is something I strongly suggest you do. Does everybody have classes in their store? Are people doing classes? It's really a great idea, having either teach it yourself or having a teacher that'll teach it for you. We charge a nominal fee for New York. We actually brew a beer during the class. We have some samples during the class. They get a booklet. We do a PowerPoint presentation. It takes away that intimidation. Even I've had people take the class who've watched all the homebrew videos that they could, and then they still take the class because they need to see it done. I've had people who already know how to brew take the beginning class because they want to see if what they're doing was right. So it's the beginning classes we do about two times a week, and we sell out at 14 people, so we keep them small. And then we do advanced classes once or twice a month. So we do a class in hops and yeast. I'm working on this water class. We do all-grain class. We do off-flavor classes. We do classes in recipe writing. These are for the people who are already brewing who want to get some knowledge out of us. There is something that that will happen in your store. People will try to get the class from you as you're just in the store. They'll say, so how do I do all-grain brewing? And my answer usually is, well, we have this class. Because get them into the class. Get them to learn through that. I will give them a little bit of information and talk about it and say, well, there's this book, How to Brew. I'm always going towards the sale. But I like to move them towards the classes because it brings them into the community of homebrewers, gets them to meet people. So this is one of the great things we do, and it's about a third of our revenue. We encourage questions. People want to come in and ask questions. We encourage them to bring beer if they want to bring in their beer and share it with us. Sometimes we'll get three or four people at one time. That's always a good day. And that way they can get our advice as to what's good or what's bad. We do have a certified Cicerone on our staff who will, you know, really evaluate the beer. I don't have time to become a Cicerone. I would love to, but I drink enough beer. We reply promptly to the emails, texts, and the phone calls. We make sure that anybody who has any question knows that we're there for them. Anytime somebody gets a beginning kit, I give them my business card that has my cell phone number on it. And I say, you can always contact me. You're not alone. Now, this may sound like an insane thing to do because you'd think that people are going to be calling and texting me all the time, but they don't. They really don't. Only when they have a serious problem will they do it. They usually will call the store with the airlock questions. But otherwise, it allows them to know that there's somebody there for them, and that actually makes them feel better. So encourage the questions. It makes people feel very comfortable. And have handouts and some information and stuff. We have copies of every book that we sell in the store as a store copy. We have a lot of the AHA publication pamphlets printed out. This way they can go through it themselves. I sold more copies of Classic Styles this way by saying, well, here's our copy. They look through it and they're like, well, I'm going to get this. So it's a good tool. It's just nice to have information. And we also, one thing we do is we have our own recipes. And I don't know if you guys have your own recipes as well, but we have about a book of about 100 different recipes. The front page of the recipe is a 5-gallon extract step by step so that it's foolproof. And on the other side, we have the same recipe as 1-gallon all grain, 2.5-gallon all grain for brew in a bag, 2.5-gallon extract, and 5-gallon all grain. And this way, when someone says, I love this beer, but I'm an all grain brewer, they have the recipe. We don't have the instructions on that sheet because we can't fit them, so we do have an online link on the sheet so that they can get the instructions online, plus the bottling instructions. So we make sure that, again, information is available and that they're making a lot of beer. That's what we want them to do. We want them to make beer, and we want them, when I say them, our customers, our wonderful clients, we want them to make beer, and we want them to make good beer. And the joke is because we want you to bring us beer, and we don't want you to bring us crappy beer. This one's super important. These are all super important. Hire knowledgeable employees. You must have employees who know more than your customers do, as much as possible. Obviously, some of the customers are going to know a lot. I've learned a great deal from my customers. But my employees can't be people that say, oh, I don't know. I didn't know you could brew beer. We have people sometimes wanting to work for us so that they can learn how to brew beer. And we're like, no, that's not going to work. You got to have a passion for this. And you have to really like people and be friendly. Hard thing to find in New York City. But we do have them. I mean, who wants to work at a retail store, right? Especially and having to be specialized. It is a difficult thing, but we usually hire from our customers. The customers a lot of times will be like, well, I'm changing jobs. I'd like to work here. And say, okay, I think you're good. So we'll do it. Don't want to get into it, but it's a matter of value for us, too. We don't want to put too much work into somebody who's going to leave in a couple of months. But we have a great staff, and we keep them happy, actually, by allowing them to brew beer quite often. We have brew days with them, and we encourage them to learn as much as possible. This guy here is our Cicerone, and we paid for half of his Cicerone training so that we could have a Cicerone on staff. So making sure that we have a really strong employee base is very important to us. But most of the times, they're doing dishes. And we tell them that. And you're going to be cleaning dishes and stocking. So remember that, but you also have to know how to brew beer really well. So this is something that definitely helps with forging a community within the store. Now, when we're talking about community, we're talking about people who homebrew, like beer, that are in the beer, the whole beer idea. And these communities are naturally there, and they can get bigger and bigger. We want to bring more people into it. I know a lot of this sounds like marketing, and it is. Some of this is marketing, but it's really more value. That's what we try to add, is just a value to the customer so that they have a reason to come here. This thing that this was my business partner Douglas's idea is our monthly homebrew swap. We did this since we first opened 5 years ago. Every first Wednesday, we encourage homebrewers to bring beer into the store at 6:30 and share it with each other. Now, you might not be able to do this according to the laws in your state. I understand that. But if you can do this, this is a great way for your customers to meet each other, right? So they get to meet each other. Beginners get to get advice from advanced people. Advanced people get to do collaboration beers together. They get to learn each other's techniques, and they end up becoming friends. And they see your store as the place that they've gathered, where they've met, and they feel that. What happened with our homebrew swap, that's Charlie. Charlie actually came to one of our homebrew swaps about 2 years ago. 70 people in my 900-square-foot store showed up to see Charlie. And we were told he'll try three beers. So we actually had a little mini contest. Three beers were chosen. He chose the best one out of the three, and then he went on to try every single person's beer in the place. He was amazing. And this is a value that we added too. I'll talk about this in a second. But having Charlie come to the store made people say, whoa, you did this for us? And we're like, yeah, and for us. I mean, Charlie's awesome. So yeah, that's why. So if you can do these homebrew swaps, out of our homebrew swap, a actual club has formed called the Bruminaries. They all would come to the swaps all the time, and we called them the luminaries of our store. And so they started the Bruminaries Club and quickly became the largest homebrew club in New York City. I'm a member, and I was pouring last night at club night as a member of the Bruminaries. So that brings me, as homebrew shop owner, into the fold, into their world. They see me as one of them. One of them. Now, you don't really want to pay too much attention to one club, and I'll talk about that in a second, but I am broomy through and through. Invite homebrew authors. This is a no-brainer. You would love to have John Palmer in your store. It's not the easiest thing in the world. It took us a year to get John in, but persistence pays off. New York City's a soft market. It's considered a soft market. I mean, there's only one homebrew shop. It's densely populated, and there are a lot of homebrewers and more breweries starting. But it is hard to get people to come in, believe it or not. John was gracious. Finally, he was coming in for a different event and was very gracious to come to our store and do a signing. And I ended up taking him to different clubs in the area. I set up events that he could sign at and talk about his water book at different clubs. So I was able to give the value of my store outside the store to these different clubs by bringing John Palmer, and they appreciate that. We get a lot of local brewmasters from the local breweries coming in, talking. We've had Michael Tonsmere has been in. We really make an effort to offer these things to people. But this one is a hard one. This takes a lot of time and a lot of emails and phone calls. So I would like to actually thank Christy Switzer of the Brewers Association for helping me out in the past 5 years getting people in the store. So if someone's got a new book coming out, get on it right away. See if you can get them in. They want to sell the book, and they want to meet homebrewers. They love it. So sometimes it takes some money, which we don't have, but sometimes the clubs do. We're getting Gordon Strong in because one of the clubs have a budget to fly him in, and then they offered us to have him sign. So I was like, wow, yeah, okay, thanks. So it's pretty cool. We offer technical workshops, which are really awesome. These are one-off things that people can come in and learn about specific breweries or specific techniques. This picture here is Goose Island. This is their barrel age program. That's Mike Siegel. And he came in and talked about barrel aging at Goose Island, and they brought in some goose beers for tasting. This was a revenue generator. We did charge money for this to come in, so it was good, but it was also a great community builder and brought in a lot of people who had never been in the store who were Goose Island fans. So we offer other types of technical workshops when a brewery might want to talk about IPAs or something like that, or about their latest release. We will bring them in so that people can meet these breweries and talk. That line between home brewer and craft brewer is getting smaller and smaller. The techniques are very similar. So the customer wants to learn from the people who do it for a living. So whenever we can, we will bring people in. Offering free demos. We do several free demos. We do a brew in a bag demo. We do kegging demos. These, again, make people realize that you care about them, but it also is a way of selling stuff, because if you do a kegging demo, at the end of the kegging demo, you have kegs for sale, and you have your regulators for sale. But people like to know how to do this, and they like to see it done. And by offering it for free, it shows them that you care, that they know what they're doing about it. You're not actually trying to get revenue from them, even if they already have keg. Even if they got a keg from somewhere else, they can come to our demo and we'll show them how to keg their beer. That's one thing that we do. We have a couple of different free demos that we are actually, our recipe writing class is going to be a free demo as well, just to get people going. So we do some free events. We have to ticket them just so that we know how many people are showing. Usually 80% show up. So we do ticket them. Okay. Events outside the store. So beyond doing these events in the store, and we do a lot of them. We do these other outside the store events. It's good to get your name out there. It's a marketing thing, but it's good for the community to see that you're outside and you're caring about their events and different beer events that are happening. One thing I didn't mention before is that my store is very focused on beer. We don't do a lot of wine. We do a cider day every year, where somebody, one of our customers brings in a cider press and people can bring in apples and press the ciders. That's one of our free events that we do. But otherwise, we're very beer oriented. We don't do cheese or any of that stuff. If we do, we would have cheese events too. But I don't know, I just really like beer. At the end of the day, my girlfriend's like, "You want a drink?" I'm like, "Give me a beer." She's like, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah, I like beer. What can I tell you?" So events outside the store. It's a good idea to get involved with non-brewing events. We occasionally get invited to do an event at the store or somewhere that has absolutely nothing to do with beer. But these are good things to do because you're going to meet people that are outside your circle and people that may have been thinking about brewing beer and want to come in. Again, it's more marketing, but they'll see, again, that you care about what's happening. This particular photo is me teaching a class on medieval brewing in the Cloisters, which is a medieval museum in upstate New York. Not upstate. It's upstate to me. It's northern Manhattan. it took me almost 2 hours to get there, which was a lot. That was a really, really nice event. I felt like a real hoity-toity guy talking about beer. But I got people into the store, and they were appreciative of the fact we did it. One of my favorite non-brewing events that I did was an actual talk on brewing beer. This was on medieval beer, but I was on brewing beer with samples at a store in Brooklyn called Babeland. Is anybody familiar with Babeland? Babeland is a sex toy shop. That is what they sell. And they invited me in to talk about beer, and I couldn't say no. So I went in, I brought a couple of samples. It was mainly women. I probably had about a dozen women drinking my beer, chatting me up about brewing beer, and the best part about it was the next thing they had after me was a sex toy demonstration. And so I had all these drunk women going over, having a great time with the sex toy demonstration. It's just one of those unique things that happens in Brooklyn. It was pretty awesome. Creating your own events is a really great way to get the community involved with your store. We have several breweries in New York City, and because of our population density, they are close to each other. They'll be grouped together in certain areas. So we become very friendly with the breweries, and some of them will let us actually brew beer with them. So we will bring some customers to do a 5-barrel batch of something, which is great for a couple of the customers. They'll usually have like a little lottery as who's going to go. We go, we brew the beer, and then 3 or 4 weeks later, we hold a bicycle ride for the release of the beer. The last one we did was at a brewery called Strong Rope, which is not too far from us. We released the beer there, and then we went to three other breweries on bicycle, so it's a drunken bike ride. I do all these things with them, and you can see it brings people together. It gives them a sense of fun, and it makes them love homebrewing, and it makes them love their community. So we love doing these events. We also do a pro-am every year where we get breweries to brew with amateurs, with homebrewers. So we pick them. It's a process of getting a homebrewer with a brewery, and they brew a beer together, and then they serve that beer a beer from the brewery and a beer from the home brewer at a local bar. This is also a ticketed event. So we'll end up having 15 beers being poured, and then the winner, by audience choice, gets to brew the beer on a commercial size with the brewery. So it's a really nice prize for them to have. Brings people in to drink the beer that maybe are fans of the brewery but didn't know much about homebrew and now can see how good homebrew is. We love doing that Pro-Am event. Again, these things are a lot of work. I also do all the inventory control, marketing. I run the store. I run the brew on premises. And I do all the social media and this. So, yeah, it's a lot, but I take days off sometimes. Sponsor the club events and contests. And this is where you really don't want to play favorites. Try to sponsor any club that's in your area. We have, I think, 6 or 7 clubs in New York City. Anytime they're having some sort of event, we sponsor it either by giving a prize as a gift certificate or just showing up and pouring beer, just having our presence known. And we help out with their contests. I try to go to as many homebrew club meetings as I can, which is more than a little difficult, but I do like to just show up and be part of the community. Even though I am homebrew shop owner, I am homebrewer. The clubs are the natural community. They're there. If you have a homebrew club near you, you have a community. So it's a great idea to be involved with them, to talk to them and help them out. They will appreciate it, and they won't forget your store. And this brings us to discounts and different perks that you can give. Some people don't want to give discounts, and I understand that because it can hurt the bottom line, but if it gets customers back in, then it helps. So I have that return customer. One thing we do is we offer the discounts for dues-paying customers. For people that are actually supporting their homebrew shop, they're the ones that get the discount. If someone their homebrew club, then they get the discount. So we have to make sure that we get a list of people that pay dues. About every 6 months, we get a list, and we put them into our system. We use Lightspeed, and they get the discount. We offer the 5% discount for AHA members, too. Encourage your people to become members of the American Homebrewers Association. This is the best thing that we have in homebrewing, is this association. It is the mother community. They get discounts at other places too, but we sell the memberships, and we tell our people, even if you're a member of another club, be a member of the American Homebrewers Association. This is going to only be better for everybody involved in homebrewing. Now, we don't stack the discounts, because some of our customers are members of all 6 clubs and the AHA. It's like, well, I owe you money. It doesn't work that way. They get just one discount. But we do offer discounts, and we find that it does bring people back into the store. They know that they can get a discount from us. We don't discount everything. We only discount the things that have the higher profit margins. The ones that we, you know, at 20% profit margin, I'm not going to give you 5% off, just so you know. Offer discounts on the brew kits for the beginning classes. So this is can be the difference between a sale or not a sale. At the end of the class, we do a little quiz, and we have coupons, and we make sure everyone gets all the questions right, and everybody gets a coupon at the end for 10% off our beginning kit. This will move people in the direction of brewing. Once they buy that kit, stay on top of them. We will actually send them an email a month later and say, how's it going? What kind of beer did you make? What's happening? We want to try it. Make them feel like they're wanted and that you care about them, because you do. We certainly care about our customers. Without them, we don't exist. And this is something we found that works well, and this is more of a marketing thing, donating seats for brewing classes to charities. Charities are always looking for something to raffle or auction off. Our brewing classes are $55 a seat. So we offer a gift certificate for 2 seats. It's $110 value. And it's always a big sale for them. It's always a big auction item. And it brings people in that might not necessarily have come into your store to learn how to brew. And you bring them into the brewing community. So we find that this works out really well for doing it. It really helps if they are a nonprofit so that you can get the in-kind letter and get the tax deduction. But if someone's doing something that is just a really good cause or a good event, we will donate as well. Usually just the classes, because it doesn't really cost us anything to donate those. So I'm going to talk a little bit about media and social media. This is more along the marketing end, but it also is a way of keeping in touch with your community. If you're not using Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, Snapchat, any of this stuff, you're going to have to. It's just the way people talk nowadays. It's amazing. I barely make phone calls anymore. I remember when we used to use phones. Anybody remember that? Now that's just a secondary thing on your phone. So encourage your customers, obviously, to follow you on the social media and post often. Give good content. It doesn't have to be, like I said, we don't do sales. So it doesn't have to be, hey, sale at Bitter and Esther's. We like to be like, go to an event and take pictures at the event and take pictures of the customers and tag them and say, hey, look, this is what this person was doing. Excellent beer from this person. Show that you care. Have you got that yet? That's what I keep saying. But show that you care, and show that you care online. Encourage your customers to post and tag you as well. Show that you are there and part of the community. And the social media thing is getting more and more important. So if you're not doing it, definitely get on there. And some of the things you can post are breweries events and beer store events and bar events and club events. These are outside the homebrewing community, but it's all beer. So by focusing on beer, you are, again, the hub of the community. And they will appreciate it, especially the breweries. And the bars, you know, there are perks there. You get your first pint free. And be willing to be interviewed. I'm surprised a lot of times how people don't actually want to talk to press. If there's any little blogger, anybody who wants to talk to you about your shop, talk to them. There's no reason not to. Sometimes it escalates. We actually, it's a whole long story, but we had a blogger interview us who ended up finding out about a friend of ours who had a fermentation on wheels bus, interviewed her, she got a book deal out of it, got an article in the New York Times. A year later, the New York Times saw our name in that article and interviewed us, and we got a Sunday Times article out of it. And it took like 2 years, but it was from one little blog interview. So always interview. This picture here is me being interviewed in Brooklyn for Tokyo Television. Now, why the hell would I do that, right? Because it's awesome. It was fun, and they love Brooklyn in Japan. I had maybe two people come in and say, I saw you on TV, but you never know. You never know what's going to happen. So always willing to be interviewed and talk to people out there. Working with local breweries, we find, again, is bridging that gap between homebrew and craft brew. Craft brew is going that way, and homebrew is going this way. Let's go back this way. Let's show people that homebrewing is where these craft breweries started, and the craft breweries will appreciate it because they are all started off now as home brewers. You're never going to find a craft brewery that didn't start by home brewers, and they remember, and they some of them still home brew. So they're willing to work with you. They're willing to do events. They're very busy, so it takes some time and some finagling, but if you can get your local brewery, and hopefully you have breweries near your brew shop, then you can bring people who drink beer into your fold, right? So not all home brewers are craft drinkers. Now, not all craft drinkers are home brewers, and that's something that we can change. We can show them that there's really no difference. You can drink some craft brew. Hey, this is great. Say, well, you know, you can do that, and you can home brew. There's no reason why. Let's just keep drinking beer. That's what we do, right? So why not make it yourself? There will be people that will be hesitant about it, but at least they can see that homebrew is good. And so if you do an event at a brewery or with a brewery and you have homebrew at the event and they try it, it's got to be good homebrew, they can see that this is a viable thing, that this isn't just a single industry. It's all connected. And that means becoming friendly with the local breweries. A lot of them will be customers. If they're nearby, breweries still need homebrew supplies, right? Sometimes they do, actually. I've had breweries wipe me out of hops because they're like, we're out of Saaz. I want all of yours. I'm like, yeah, sure, it's all for sale. becoming friendly with them is important. Going to the brewery, meeting them, trying their beer, encouraging people through social media to go to these breweries, creating cross-promotional events, like I said, with our bike ride and the pro-ams, and anything you can think of will bring these two industries together, and they should be. They should be going in the same trajectory. Okay, I'm at my summary. I talk fast. Freaking New Yorker. Oh, wow, no. That was 45 minutes. Holy crap. That was fun. So in summary, so focus on your community before the short-term gain. It will pay back to you. Remember that the customer is, I don't want to say king, but they are king, but the customer is why you exist, and we are basically one and the same. We are homebrewers who just happen to own a homebrew shop. So bring them into the fold. Be friendly. Get to know them. An educated consumer is your best customer. And it's true. People that know how to brew beer will come to your store and make good beer and make sure you have good supplies. Make sure that you can focus on the people who know how to brew beer and make good beer. The cool thing about making good beer is that you're going to want to make more beer. Right, and so then they're going to come back. So you want to make sure that everyone's making beer and enjoys the hobby. And make sure you communicate that value of personal interaction. And that I don't mean going up to the customer and saying, you know, if it wasn't for me. Actually saying to them, this is what we do. Come on in. That sort of communication. This just reminds me, I had two nice things said to me by customers last night at club night. One of them, a guy came up to me and he said, You're not just a homebrew shop, you're a community hub. You actually are a community. He actually said that to me. I said, that's funny, that's what I'm talking about tomorrow. And he said, it's beautiful, I love that. And another guy came in about 4 months ago and bought a whole ton of stuff. And he was just getting started, but he wanted to start big, and I helped him out. I worked with him for a while getting this stuff together. And I saw him for the first time last night because he lives in Ecuador. He brought all this stuff back to Ecuador, and it turns out he now has a 30-gallon homebrew system. He's opening a homebrew shop, and he's going to be opening a brewery in Ecuador, and he learned everything from my store, which was really cool. And the last thing he said to me was, if I had never met you, I would have a lot more money. And I was like, well, you're happy? He's like, yeah, no, thank you. I was like, what does your wife think about that? He's like, I don't want to talk about it. But he's doing the beer thing, and that made me feel really good in Ecuador. I have a place to stay in Ecuador whenever I want. Reach outside the beer community. Remember, there are people outside our bubble that may want to come in. It's always good to just keep telling them. Again, that's a marketing thing, but remember, your customers are parts of other communities. So their other communities may not be brewing beer, but they can be ambassadors to bring them in as well. So reach outside of that beer community, and be a part of the entire beer community. Beer is what we do. We are homebrew, but reach out to the breweries, to the bars, beer, 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 beer. That's what I tell people all the time. We love doing it, and I hope you all can maybe glean something out of what I said. It's amazing the trip that I've had in the past five years, so it was fun to talk about it, and thank you very much for listening, and if you have any questions, I'm willing to answer them. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Great talk.
Thank you.
And the topic of classes and of education has come up a couple of times in these industry sessions. And you touched upon both the in-store education, the one-on-one, you know, yeah, I can help you a little bit, but steer you towards the class kind of stuff. There was also some discussion, some questions, I think you asked one a couple of days ago, about the classes as one-time event for people that are, you know, gee, I want to, you know, do that, check that off my list, versus as a way of bringing people in. And can you talk about that a little bit more, what your experience is with the with how much the class really does bring in people as new return customers, versus, you know, customer acquisition, versus it's a one-time, it was a fun event, see you later.
Great. Yeah, sure, that's a good question. I would say out of the 14 people that will sell out in the class, two or three will buy. And I don't know if I've really tracked how many keep coming back, but once we get them to have a kit and brewing, I'm assuming that they're coming back or they're at least brewing. So it really, we thought it would be, you know, 14 people. We sold 14 kits, but it doesn't really work that way. But we do get, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 people that'll buy kits, which is great, at the end of the night, and we'll start brewing beer. So we do see our customer base growing. We have a base that we keep track of. We have 5,000 people in our base. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all customers coming back all the time, but we do have their names and stuff in that. As far as the people that don't come back, at least now they know how to brew beer, and they know what beer is made out of. And that is still good for the overall community. They have the knowledge base. Whether they want to brew or not, that's up to them. But now at least it's not that much of a mystery to them. So when they, and I joke, sometimes I teach a beginning class, I teach SRM, and I say, you know, and the cool thing about SRM is that you can go to your local bar, hold up the glass and go, that's about 12 SRM, and sound really smart. And I said, don't do that too many times, but, you know, you can at least do that. So it does, increasing knowledge for beer overall, because this whole beer thing's happening so fast, is good for everybody, I think.
So staying in line with the people coming in for the classes, do you track where you're getting them from? You're pulling in 28 people a week. That's pretty phenomenal, but I know Brooklyn's densely populated, so I understand that's a function of that. But how are you getting? Word of mouth, advertising, Facebook? Like,
cool. We have some partners that we work with. We work with Course Horse. So we do have a couple of different partners that will go out and get people. So we sell the class at a little bit of a discount to them so that they can get some money, and we use their list. Basically, we don't do Groupon. We don't do Living Social because we end up getting a quarter of what. We did, when we first started, we did that just to get the name out. It was more of a marketing thing, but we stopped doing that. I think a lot of the class sales are word of mouth. I really do. We do market the classes a lot. A lot of times when I'm being interviewed or something, a lot of that press that I do, we push the classes there. Do we track it? I would have to ask I have a guy who does that. My buddy John does that. So I'll have to ask him, how do we track this? Where they come from? That's a good question, because they do come in. I don't know, I just talk to them. Thank you. It's not always sold out, but they sell out a lot.
I had a similar question, which is, you know, I do Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff, and I sometimes feel like I'm not reaching the people that I want to reach, especially people that don't follow us a lot. So how do you let people know about demos and events and things like that?
We do a weekly mailer, which I didn't mention before. Get email addresses from people, and we do a weekly mailer. We make sure that it's content, that it's not just advertising. We want to make sure that it's good content. You have a better chance of people opening that. Facebook in particular is a pain in the butt. Sometimes I'll post something on Facebook, and it'll say 2 people reached because they want you to pay to do that, so it doesn't go into the feed. So what I do, a little Facebook tip, is I will post on my Facebook page for Bitter and Esters, and then I'll share it onto my personal page. And once it's on the personal page, as long as somebody likes your store page, then their people will see that you liked it, and then it starts to go. Instagram is way better, and Twitter is better, but Facebook is what people use. So that's one of the ways that we get people to know about it.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. I really appreciate it. It's a fantastic talk.
Thank you.
Two questions kind of surrounding events in the periphery of what you do. So the first question is, do you kind of just say yes to everything outside of your store? Like, how do you separate those out? That's the first question.
Good question.
And the second question is, like, those folks who are on the periphery, who are kind of customers who may be interested in home brewing, like, what kind of events are you finding that are successful in bringing those people into your store? Are you mostly doing breweries? Are you doing cooking things? What kind of things are you finding that people are, like you mentioned earlier, like, interested in brewing, but have not really come into that Venn diagram of yours?
Cool. Good questions. The first one, do we say yes to everything? We used to. We learned we have to pick and choose a little bit. Sometimes it's kind of like, okay, no, I'm not. We have to think about the value to us when we would do a demo, because it does take some work. So, no, we don't say yes to everything, but we do say yes to the things that, where we might be able to reach people that would be interested. I did a food and wine demo one time, and I knew that that would be good. My business partner, Douglas, one time did a demo at a fashion show. I don't think that brought anybody in, but I think he liked it. But that that was in the beginning. Where do we the events where we bring people in that are not brewers? I would say it's the homebrew events. So there are a lot of contests and homebrew events that are put on by like non-clubs. There's one called Pride of Brooklyn, which is a big one in New York, and we just show up and put out. We bring a beer and we put out cards and stuff. And a lot of the people that come to those type of events, like our pro-ams and stuff, they're beer drinkers, but they're not brewers. So by being part of that and saying, oh yeah, all these people, they made beer and they buy stuff here and we teach it, I've seen a lot of people come in that way. And then working with the breweries too, again, if we do something with Other Half Brewing or something where people, you know, they love these breweries and they see that we're part of them, it definitely gives us some street cred as well. And so it's hard to track. We will ask people, how'd you hear of us? And a lot of times they say Google. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, I know that guy. So, any more questions? I've got beer to drink. I finally can have a couple of beers now. I'm feeling great.
I'll make it quick then.
Sure.
Not a question so much as just two things that I've done, because some of the stuff you've mentioned I'm already doing. Some of the stuff you've mentioned I can't do. For instance, brew on premise, out of the question. Forbidden by the lease. So what I started doing about a year ago, these things called Wednesday workshops. It's a rotating schedule. So I do cider 1 week. I do cheese making 1 week. I do fermented vegetables 1 week. Basically, anything that can be fermented, aside from beer, you come in and we'll show you how to do it.
Brilliant.
On a Wednesday night. Wine making is another one. I charge you $10 to come in, but I give you a $10 gift certificate if you show up.
Brilliant.
That way you've got skin in the game, and I know I don't stand around for 2 more hours after I've been there for 10 and a half. I went back and tracked so we started that, April of last year. 8 months brought me $4,000 more revenue.
Cool.
So that was one really successful thing. Another thing I do is, you know, I like to drink beer too. And so when I go to some of the pubs that I like to visit, I'll hear some of the servers come, those blankety blank beer snobs. And I know the managers and some of the owners of these places, and I told them, I says, you know, they're not beer snobs. They're beer geeks. And your servers have to know more than they do, or at least as much. Would you like me to come in and talk to your staff for 15 minutes one night?
We've done that, yeah.
And it works. And now I've got 4 or 5 pubs that are, I walk in and say, hey, we're doing this event. Would you guys hang this poster up, and can I leave some flyers on your bar? No problem. One of them even puts it inside their menus now.
See, that's a great idea, too. We've actually brought in servers into the store. They've like our servers need to know about beer, and a couple of restaurants have brought people in, and we do a sensory evaluation with them. But that's a really great idea. I'm going to steal your Wednesday night thing, just so you know. That's pretty awesome. So, all right, hey, thanks everybody. It was really a lot of fun. Enjoy the rest of the conference. I'll see you on the floor. We'll have a beer.